From the stuff your mother never told you to the stuff your doctor never learned, On Health is what happens when a midwife plus a Yale-trained MD shares about all things women's health, from periods to menopause, sex to reproductive health politics, motherhood to mental health. Join me for taboo-busting conversations that demystify and destigmatize our bodies, all while bridging the gap between conventional medicine and wellness. Along the way, we'll be exploring the science and wisdom of how our bodies work, what makes us well, what gets in the way, and how we can live our best lives on our terms. When it comes to women's health and well-being, there's nothing we won't talk about. The new medicine for women is here. I'm Dr. Aviva Ram. Welcome to the podcast. When I was applying to medical residency in obstetrics and gynecology, the doctor interviewing me commented upon seeing my interest in the impact of endocrine disruptors on women's reproductive health as my primary area of research. Dr. Ram, you don't believe in that BPA crap, do you? This was years before definitive evidence proved the association between BPA and miscarriage, as well as other reproductive issues, sometimes due simply enough to women working at checkout counters and airlines handling BPA-laden receipts and airline tickets. Ironically, Hugh Taylor, then an OB-GYN at that same institution, many years later, blew the lid wide open on this connection, among others. My own research already had me informing the women in my midwifery practice for years about the potential hazards of BPA and other environmental chemicals that mimic our endogenous hormones for ourselves and our children before and after they're born. In February of 2025, a study published in Nature Medicine generated a slew of scary headlines. Human brain samples contain an entire spoon's worth of nanoplastics, as CNN reported. Researchers had found several grams of tiny plastic particles in human brain samples, roughly the weight of a takeout spoon. Perhaps even more alarmingly, though, the level of plastics detected was nearly 50% more than found in brain samples from 2016. While the frequently repeated estimate that the average person ingests a credit card's worth of plastic every week has been recently questioned, there's no doubt that tiny shards of plastic are getting into our bodies and even our brains. So how much should we worry about microplastics? What's the current state of the science on their health risks? And what can you do as an individual? And what can we do collectively to reduce exposure? Let's dive in. What are microplastics and nanoplastics? Synthetic plastic was first created in the late 1800s, but our reliance on it has increased in recent decades. More than half of all plastic ever made has been made since 2002. In 2019, 460 million metric tons of plastic were produced, and production is estimated to triple by 2060. More than one-third of plastic produced today is for packaging, which is used only once before being thrown away. Overall, only 9% of plastic is recycled. The rest ends up in our landfills and oceans. As plastics degrade over time, it never really goes away. It just breaks down into smaller and smaller tiny pieces. Microplastics are defined as plastic particles that are smaller than 5 millimeters, and nanoplastics are those smaller than 1,000 nanometers, 1,000th the average width of a human hair. That's why microplastics and nanoplastics are literally everywhere in our environment, in the air we breathe, the food we eat, the water we drink, even in ocean depths where they get into the fish we eat and remote mountaintops. Researchers think that they enter our body mainly through ingestion, but also inhalation. For example, the wear and tear on our car tires releases nanoplastic particles and microplastic particles that pollute the air. There's even some evidence that we can absorb them through our skin, from personal care products like cosmetics, to which nanoplastics are sometimes intentionally added, and even our clothes and our baby's diapers. Some microplastics, especially larger particles, are cleared out of our bodies, but the tiniest nanoplastic particles, especially those small enough to get into our bloodstream and travel through our bodies, can cross the placenta, our blood-brain barriers, and have even been detected in human hearts, blood vessels, lungs, livers, testes, gastrointestinal tracts, placenta, semen, breast milk, and even a baby's first poops. The most minuscule nanoplastics are so small that they can end up inside individual cells, which experts find most worrisome when it comes to potential health impacts. But what do we know about the health effects of microplastics? Well, research on micro and nanoplastic particles' health is still in its infancy, but a growing body of evidence suggests it's not good. Microplastics have been shown to accumulate in organs and lead to biological changes, including oxidative stress and inflammation in human cell lines. According to a 2024 systematic review of the research published in Environmental Science and Technology, mostly animal studies, microplastics are suspected to harm reproductive, digestive, and respiratory health, possibly increasing the risks of lung and colon cancer. And emerging research also suggests links to metabolic disorders and a weakened immune system. We also have good evidence that many of the 20,000 chemicals found in plastics, and therefore in micro and nanoplastics, are also harmful to health, including per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances like PFAS, bisphenol A, and phthalates. For example, a recent study estimates that exposure to phthalates in plastics contributed to 350,000 deaths from heart disease worldwide in 2018 alone. The potential danger for microplastics may come from the tiny particles themselves and the carcinogenic and endocrine-disrupting chemicals they leach, or some combination. When it comes to human studies, we don't yet have large epidemiologic studies comparing the long-term health of those with more or less microplastic and nanoplastic exposure. Most of the human studies to date have been small, but they find a correlation between a higher burden of microplastics in certain areas of the body and disease. For example, a 2022 study found that the livers from people with cirrhosis have more micro and nanoplastics than healthy livers. A 2022 study published in the New England Journal of Medicine found that patients who had micro and nanoplastics detectable in their carotid artery plaque were at higher risk of heart attack, stroke, or death from any cause in the following years compared to those in whom plastics were not detected. Preliminary research released this year showed that the placentas of babies who were delivered preterm contained more micro and nanoplastic particles than full-term babies. And in the new study of brain tissue, the researchers found 3 to 5 times more nanoplastics in the brains of people with dementia compared to healthy people. However, it's important to remember that correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation, and it's very possible that other confounding variables explain these findings, or that the causal arrow is reversed. For example, researchers emphasize that people with dementia may have more microplastics in their brain because their disease leads them to have a more porous blood-brain barrier and makes them less able to clear out toxins. We certainly need more research to definitively say that the levels of chronic exposure to microplastics and nanoplastics that we're experiencing are actually causing health problems. After all, the dose makes the poison. But personally, I believe that the early data is alarming enough to compel us to take action to reduce our exposure. So how can we do this? First, as I always tell my patients, breathe. Given how ubiquitous microplastics and nanoplastics are in our food, water, and air, it's not entirely possible to avoid them. And freaking out about it doesn't do us any good. But there are some things you can do to reduce unnecessary and avoidable exposures, including these steps that you can start implementing today. Don't drink from plastic water bottles, period. And especially, don't drink from them if they've been sitting out in the sun, getting hot in your car, or anywhere else. A 2024 study found that 1 liter of bottled water, the equivalent of 2 standard-sized bottled waters, contained an average of 240,000 plastic particles from 7 types of plastics, and some 90% of those were nanoplastics. So get a stainless steel water bottle, get a clean canteen, get a glass water bottle from the Life Factory company. That's what I use. They're so durable and they make kids' cups. Just get away from using plastic unless you absolutely 100% have to. Avoid heating food or water in plastic and consider switching to glass containers for food storage. This is unequivocal in my home. I do not have any plastic storage containers for anything. A 2023 study found that within 3 minutes of microwave heating, some containers released as many as 4.22 million microplastics and 2.11 billion nanoplastic particles from only 1 square centimeter of plastic area. Storing food in plastic containers in the fridge or at room temperature was better, but after 6 months, they also released millions to billions of microplastics and nanoplastics. Consider eating lower on the food chain and avoid highly processed foods. There is evidence that plants take up microplastics from the soil and incorporate them into their roots and leaves. But the higher up on the food chain an animal is, the more microplastics likely accumulated within them. Now, I know this is going to be really controversial, especially in a time when protein and animal protein are so highly pushed. So, you know, if you're committed to eating animal protein multiple times a day, make sure that you're doing the other things to deeply reduce your exposure. But do keep in mind that legumes, nuts, and seeds are excellent sources of protein that we can also eat regularly in our diet. And in fact, studies show healthier hormone levels and better weight loss and metabolic health in people who eat more plant proteins in their diet. Doesn't mean you have to give up animal protein if you eat it, but consider finding a good balance. Highly processed foods also seem to contain more microplastics, potentially because of contamination from processing machinery, but also they're more likely to be stored in plastic packaging. In a 2024 study, researchers compared the level of microplastics in over a dozen types of protein, seafoods, meats, and plant-based proteins, and found that highly processed products, so highly processed meats, also contained the most microplastics per gram. So if you're going to include animal products in your diet, lean into those that are least highly processed. We also want to avoid heating plastic baby bottles, and we want to switch to glass bottles. A 2020 study published in Nature Food found that shaking room temperature water in polypropylene baby bottles released hundreds of thousands of microplastics. And when the temperature was raised to 158 degrees Fahrenheit, as required to prepare powdered formula, they released anywhere from 1 million to 16 million microplastic particles per liter, as well as trillions of smaller nanoplastics. So consider switching to glass bottles. And if you're using plastic bottles to make powdered formula, prepare it with 158 degree water in a glass container, then let it cool to room temperature before transferring it to the plastic bottle. Researchers also recommend that when sterilizing plastic bottles with hot water, let them cool completely before rinsing them out at least 3 times with previously boiled water that's been allowed to cool to room temperature. So as you can hear, just switch to glass. It's so much easier. Also, try to avoid plastic items for your young children more generally. A 2021 study found that babies' poops contained an average of 36,000 nanograms of polyethylene terephthalate, or PET, per gram, 10 times the amount found in adult poops. Researchers think that infants and toddlers may ingest even more microplastics than adults because in addition to drinking from plastic bottles, they put everything in their mouths, including clothes, plastic toys, utensils, sippy cups, teethers, and pacifiers, as well as when they're crawling on the floor and getting these particles from the environment, putting their hands and their toys in their mouth. So I'm going to talk about that in a minute. While we're talking about kitchen, though, and plastic bottles and containers and so forth, One thing I want to mention is switching to wood or bamboo cutting boards. A 2023 study suggests that plastic cutting boards can be a significant source of microplastics in your diet, contributing tens of millions of microplastics annually. And don't forget about plastic tea bags. A 2019 study found that steeping a single plastic tea bag releases approximately 11.6 billion microplastics and 3.1 billion nanoplastics into a single cup of tea. So get organic cotton or make your own by steeping your tea in a glass teapot with a stainless steel tea insert. I do this every day. It's really easy and a beautiful ritual. Supplements can be an important way to fill the gaps in our nutrition and can sometimes be a missing link in what conventional medicine doesn't have to offer. When it comes to a whole host of health concerns we face as women and mothers, finding supplements we can trust isn't always easy. Studies show us that sometimes what we think we're getting isn't actually what's in the bottle. Enter Fullscript, the company I use to meet my own, my family's, and my patients' supplements needs. With over 300 professional quality products carefully curated to meet our needs from preconception to postpartum, menstrual health to menopause, and our overall wellness, and for products for our children and our partners too. Fullscript attests to the quality of their products, getting you as close as possible to what the products say is on the package. And I'm committed to bringing these to you more affordably. If you use the link avivaram.com/supplements, you'll find an automatic 15% discount on every order. And because my work is mission-driven, I make a percentage of profits available to organizations improving maternal health. Don't worry, you'll find the links in the show notes. Join me in getting better nutritional and herbal supplements for you and yours while doing good for mamas and babies too. So as I mentioned with babies crawling on the floor and picking things up, for our children and for ourselves, regularly vacuum and damp mop. Sweeping is okay, but remember, sweeping is going to sweep dust up into the air and we can ingest and inhale these. So once a week, vacuum and damp mop is really important. And you can consider using an air purifier with a HEPA filter to reduce the amount of microplastics and nanoplastics in the air and dust in your home. This is especially important if you have small babies and toddlers who, again, crawl on the floor where microplastics have shed from clothing, furniture, and carpets, and that can accumulate. We also want to avoid microbeads in cosmetics, a form of microplastic that often appears in scrubs, cleansers, and even toothpaste as if exfoliants, as well as in foundations, sunscreens, shampoos, and deodorants as fillers, binders, or film formers. Products with glimmer or shimmer may also contain plastic-based particles. Choose natural exfoliants like sugar or oats and look for certified micro-free or eco-labeled products. You can use the Environmental Working Group EWG.org app called Skin Deep, and it's free to help identify products that you can trust and rely on for yourself and your family. And you can also use a helpful tool like Beat the Microbead app, which can help you scan products and flag hidden microplastics. You can find all this information, including all the research studies that I'm talking about, over at avivaram.com/276. That's the number 276. That's the episode we're in. And finally, if you can, choose clothes made of natural fibers like cotton or wool or silk. If you do use synthetic fibers, wash things like acrylic and nylon several times before wearing them to at least reduce the amount of microplastics. And please listen to my podcast, How Toxic Fashion is Making Women Sick and What We Can Do About It, with environmental clothing activist Alden Wicker. It's important to acknowledge that it's not at all clear how much taking these kinds of steps to reduce plastics in your homes and personal routines will actually reduce your overall body burden of microplastics and nanoplastics, the amount stored in our bodies. We don't know yet how much our exposure is also coming from things like cutting boards and water bottles and plastic food storage containers compared to our exposure from drinking water, eating food, and breathing the air. In fact, some researchers on micro and nanoplastics think we should be most concerned about the extremely small nanoplastics from particles that have degraded in the environment over the last decades, rather than the so-called fresh microplastics released from things like cutting boards and water bottles, since those particles are much larger, and research suggests that our body does clear out some of these larger microparticles. But given the growing body of evidence on microplastics, like I did with those BPAs so long ago, I believe in embracing what's called the precautionary principle, which says that when an activity potentially poses a threat to human health or the environment, precautionary measures should be taken, even if some cause and effect relationships are not fully scientifically established. This means taking proactive measures, both individual and collective, even in the face of uncertainty. And we also know that industry is not putting us first. It's not putting our children first. So what we need to do and can do is take the measures that we can, and ideally think about being an activist in your community and using your purchasing power to lean into those products that don't contain these particles to the extent that we can to demonstrate to industry that we do want to change. While I think individual efforts to reduce your exposure are really worth doing, we do really need to collectively advocate for systemic change to the way we manufacture and also safely dispose of plastic and for the use of safer plastics. As Philip Landrigan, director of the Program for Global Public Health and the Common Good at Boston College, the man responsible for discovering that lead in paint and gasoline was affecting our children's cognitive development and helping get the lead out decades ago. And I interviewed him for my podcast some years ago. He says, just because we don't know everything there is to know about every chemical in plastics does not mean we should not take action against the plastic chemicals we know are bad actors. Given the life cycle of plastic, taking action is not just for us, but for future generations. The plastic discarded today will continue to degrade into microplastics for centuries, impacting not only ourselves, but also our children and grandchildren and their children and grandchildren. Reducing our personal exposure, supporting our body's resilience, leveraging our economic power as consumers, and advocating for systemic change are not just about avoiding potential harm to ourselves. They're acts of responsibility toward a healthy future for all. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope that this gives you food for thought, actions you can take, and reliable information that moves past hyperbolic and scary clickbait titles to actionable things that you can do to make your life better. See you next week. I hope you enjoyed this episode, that it helped you to feel seen and heard, and perhaps that it even brought you some aha moments. Please share the love by sharing this with a friend or someone in your life who could benefit from the kinds of things we talk about in this space. Also, make sure to follow me on Instagram at dr.avivaram and go to avivaram.com to join the conversation about the show on my blog. While you're there, you can sign up for my free newsletter with tips on taking back your health. Be sure to leave a rating and a review for the podcast and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every week. Can't wait to see you next time.